And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. The next speaker is Josh H. from the Northwestern Group. Josh appeared in an acoustical coffee house two shows ago. He's a professional comedian, but he's earnestly working the program. I introduced him at the coffee house by saying, you've seen Josh on NBC, you've seen him on Media One, and you've seen him on MARTA. So please welcome Josh H. from the Northwest Group.
Hey, my name's Josh. I'm an alcoholic. It's great to be here. I say that a lot, but it really is great to be here. I guess I'll just start from the beginning, really. I think it's not that unique, you know, when I grew up around, you know, my earliest, memories of socializing and stuff, you know, the feeling of being different, being a bit of an outcast. Actually, not so much. I realized that humor kind of was a leverage, you know, was sort of like something I could leverage to be friends with people. And early on, I would do whatever it took, you know, in order to get you to like me. And that would be degrade myself, get in trouble, I mean, whatever. And, you know, these habits and behaviors certainly followed me through my using career. I remember the first time I ever altered my state of consciousness deliberately. Actually, it was accidentally. I was about 13 years old, 12, I think, and I was prescribed. I had an inhaler for asthma, you know, and I remember doing it a few times, and I misread the prescription, and it said, you know, you're supposed to do two inhales, you know, one time, and that's it. And somehow I thought it was four inhales four times, and I just, you know, I put the pedal to the metal on it, and I don't know what, you know, all of a sudden man, it was perfect. I was like, what? I don't know what this is, but this is great. And I went to my stepdad. He was a doctor, and I asked him. I was like, you know, I have this inhaler for asthma, as you know, and I think I did more of it than I should, and it made me feel funny. Is that okay? Is that like bad for my brain or something like that? And he was like, yeah, no, I don't. You know, it's okay. It should be all right. You know, it's just it might not be great for your heart, but you should be all right. And I was like, oh, sweet, that's like a get up. That's a get-out-of-jail-free card, you know, because you never heard, like, I never heard the Scruff McGruff crime dog talking about inhalers growing up, you know. I was like, are you doing too much asthma medication? Well, contact your authorities. So that was the beginning for me, you know, and shortly after that, I tried pot. That was not a good experience, but it didn't turn out too well. But I remember the first time I drank, and that was a big deal for me. The first time I drank, I was at a buddy's. Well, the first time I got drunk. Let me clarify. The first time I got drunk, I was at a buddy's lake house, and I was about 14 years old, and I couldn't stomach the hard stuff. I had tried to drink like whiskey and all this other stuff on my own, but I'd always like, you know, just get sick and sort of throw it back up. So this time we found this thing called Tropicana rum, and it was like, you know, perfect. It kind of tastes like Kool-Aid, and that's just, you know, right up my alley. I could finally mix it with enough stuff, get it down, and this was like, this changed everything for me. You know, when I experienced this, it was just, it was off the hook. I had this horribly boring lake house experience, and all of a sudden it was great. And I remember right away that I wanted more of it, and I wanted it immediately, and I wasn't going to let anything stop me from getting it. You know, we were at the Kroger or something, some grocery store the next day, and I just remember telling my friend, I'm like, dude, look, I'm gonna go try to steal some more of these little bottles from like that you know, the liquor section of the store. Is that cool? You know, and he's like, dude, no, are you kidding me? We're 14 years old, like, you get caught, these are like mountain men, they'll beat the crap out of us. You cannot do that. And you know, I was bribing his older brother. You know, I'll do anything. Just get me more of what I just tasted, please. And it was just this state of desperation, and that really started, that was really my pattern. You know, I mean, it was just never enough was never enough, and you know, I also remember I ended up going to boarding school. And when I was there, fast forward, I was about 15 years old or so, and when I was there, I got, one night these kids were getting kicked out of the boarding school, and they had, they were getting kicked out for smoking pot, and, so they ended up having this whole stash of, I guess, Adderall, you know, and They said, we can't use this. Can you just take this? I mean, we're going to get kicked out anyway. If you could just take this off of our hands, that'd be great. And I was like, well, how do you do this? You know, and they just showed me how you just chop it up. You can put it up your nose, whatever. And I remember the first second I tried that, too, you know, and it just was like off to the races. I did all of what was in there, which was about 100 plus milligrams, I think. I could be exaggerating, but it was a lot. I mean, I was geeked. I was calling my dad, telling him how much I loved him that night, how great of a school this place was, you know, how I really thought I had attention deficit disorder and he needed to prescribe me this medicine, you know. And I was up for like, I mean, you know, just minimal sleep as a 15-year-old, just going for it. And that was it. I mean, whenever, I know that people say they kind of work their way up, you know, and I was never like a daily user, a daily drinker, or anything like that. But for me, when I started anything that I really liked, I mean, it was like I didn't work my way up to, you know, an addictive pattern in that moment. It was a binge immediately. And it was always like at the worst place at the worst time. That was the other thing. I just had a knack for like being in terrible situations. Man, I have a joke I do on stage. It's like, you know, I say the only problem I had with drinking was that whenever I went out and drank, there was always that one person that tried to rain on my parade. You guys probably all know what I'm talking about. I'd be out and about having a good time. All of a sudden, they'd come up to me like, look, Josh, you've had about 12 shots since you've been here, okay? I think you just need to cut yourself off, put on a shirt, and stop trying to dance with every girl here. They're like, why don't you shut the heck up and learn to have fun? We're at the club! They'd be like, that may be true, Josh, but this is Sam's Club. Oh, that was the thing for me, you know. I'd always try to act like I was smarter than I was. You know, I remember early on there was this huge inferiority complex. I mean, I couldn't drink. I couldn't do a lot of stuff when I was drinking. I just looked stupid, man. I said I couldn't go to the movies drunk because I always try to brag that I was smarter than you because I had read the book. You know, we'd get out of the theater and my friends would come up to me and be like, Josh, what did you think of that movie? I was like, well, it was pretty good, but if you wanted to do what I did, you would have challenged yourself and read the book. They'd be like, you read Big Mama's House 3. Yes. So this was the thing. There was this deep-seated feeling of inadequacy. I mean, that was it. I'd medicate it with drugs. But the more I medicated, the worse I felt in the long run. You know, it was like I was temporarily curing myself only to make the disease a little more terminal. I remember going to, you know, that next summer after this boarding school thing, I decided to go to Darlington. That was a school in Rome, Georgia, for high school. I just wanted to go there, and it was the only reason I wanted to go there was because I think I saw that movie Dazed and Confused, you know, and I thought it would be a cool place. You could have a car there. You know, I knew I was probably going to go to a boarding school, but I wanted one that was close to home. I could party. I could have a lot of fun. And, you know, that summer, again, just more drinking. I couldn't actually smoke pot or anything that summer because the school drug tested you before you went. But I do remember, you know, it was like the antidote. I remember being out at the beach. I was very uncomfortable. You know, all of a sudden, I'm drinking. I'm having some, you know, what was it? I think it was... Is it Mr. Boston's? Some vodka, this disgusting thing. You know, you buy it in like a gallon drum, basically. And that was like, it fixed me, man. It was like I was around women, and it was the antidote. You know, it was the antidote for my insecurities. And it was great. I mean, at the time, I thought, like, if I could just be like this all the time, then I would be unstoppable, you know. And as I went to boarding school... as I started boarding school, you know, I partied, all kinds, you know, all drugs, alcohol, whatever. But somewhere along the lines, there was like an invisible line that was crossed. You know, I started doing some hallucinogenic drugs on top of the drinking. You name it, you know, started experimenting more, and somewhere along the lines, it stopped being cool, and I just remember there was kind of like a day I woke up, I remember what happened. I was at a friend's house, we were drinking, I got really, really, we were drinking, smoking pot, whatever, I got really messed up, and this guy, we were snorting sleeping pills, and this guy... This guy switched one of the sleeping pill lines and put crystal meth in there. And I don't even remember what happened after that. All I remember is waking up on the guy's like living room floor with his dad hovering over me saying, "You got to get out of here." And I just have no idea what I did. It was like I entered a time machine or something, you know, and I just woke up and I was there. And, you know, it vomited everywhere. I didn't remember anything, but the story that was pieced together for me was pretty horrific. And right after that, I felt like something wasn't right. You know, I was like, something has changed in me. I don't feel the same emotionally. I'm just, you know, it was like all of a sudden my spirit sort of severed a little bit, and I just was not as comfortable with who I was anymore. You know, I took some time off. I thought, and that was the beginning of this thing that I did with myself. It was like, all right, I'm just going to prove to myself I can do without all this. I'm gonna be sober. I'm gonna fix me. If I just stay away from this stuff long enough, all the, you know, nerve endings will repair themselves upstairs, and I'll feel right on track again. And it's like, you know, I would get some time, and I got a little bit of time. I felt a little better, and then I went back to the same habits, you know, hallucinogenic drugs, drinking, all that stuff, and it was like, you know, something changed. I did not, from that point on, I just did not, like, I almost, every conversation I had was like a freaking game of Battleship. I felt so uncomfortable, and I didn't know where it came from. I don't know how it happened, but I think it was just that invisible line, you know, that I crossed, that it was just too much, and it wasn't fun anymore, and something changed, and I can't exactly say what it is, but it was all fear-based after that. I stopped using to have fun, you know, and I just started using, basically hoping that it was an escape at that point. It was an escape from the person that I had become. And so anyway, I ended up leaving that school. I ended up actually getting suggested to leave. I tried to sneak out of my dorm one night, to go, I don't know, meet some women or something. And I was, it was a 3-story dorm. I was in a pink union, in a pink little suit, and I jumped out and I ran across the top 3rd story, and one of the, heads of houses heard me walking over their roof or whatever, and it was like, you know, it was obviously wasn't Santa or something, so they came out, they looked out, and I had jumped down, and I tried to hide behind a lamppost, but the lamp was on, blatantly illuminated me, and they just said, "I see you," and I just didn't say anything. I just kind of stood there, and they said, you know, Josh, you effing idiot, you realize you're hiding underneath a light, you know? So, right there, they said, okay, you can come back, but we're going to give you 36 hours of detention, and if you do anything wrong, you're out of here. So I realized that was a financial gamble I don't think my parents wanted to take, because if I did anything wrong, all their money went down the drain. So they removed me from that school, went to another school. It was you know, more of the same, and ended up going to college. Again, put no real effort, and I was a good basketball player in high school, but once I started using and doing all this stuff, all that went out down the drain. I didn't do any basketball, any sports, nothing. Ended up going to Lynn University in Boca Raton, Florida. And I, you know, alcohol had really... You know, again, it was the same thing. By this time, I had gotten, you know, through using, I was on a bunch of medications. You know, I was diagnosed, I think, bipolar, social anxiety, depression, and you know, they would give me all these meds to try to fix, to make me feel comfortable again. That was my goal, you know, and they just didn't work. I mean, I didn't know what was wrong, but something had changed, you know. And I get to college, and I remember the first night being there, everyone was out there and everyone was drinking and having fun. And you know, I was hiding in my room on the phone with my dad, who had conference called his therapist, because I was so terrified at this point to even go out and like associate with any of these people. A few summers before that, I should say too, I got arrested for the first time. That was interesting. I went out drinking. I was at a concert. I was out on the phone outside. A cop comes up to me, and I was in the bushes on the phone, and I was just, why would you talk in the bush? I don't know, in Athens, Georgia, why would you make a call from the bushes? It's just like, what goodness are you doing there? So I'm on the phone out in the bushes, and this cop comes up to me, and he goes, who are you talking to? And I was like, my brother, you know. And I was hammered. I was 17. He goes, where's your brother? I was like, how does he know where my brother is? And I was terrified. I was like, this guy has answers I don't even know. You know, I was like, Atlanta, Georgia, I guess. He goes, all right, I want you to... You've been drinking? I was like, no, maybe a little, yeah. And he said, I want you to take your wallet, let me see your license. And I give him my license, and he takes a look at it, and he says, well, it says here, you're 17 years old. And I said, well, that's my brother's license. My license. That's my brother's license. And he said, well, so your name's not Josh Harris? I go, no, he's my twin brother. My name is, like, I don't even know what name I gave him. He starts to write this down. You know, Max Harris, John, I don't know what the hell I told him. He's starting to write it down. He's buying it. I couldn't believe this guy was buying it, dude. He was writing it down. And then he's writing this stuff down, and then he says, okay, now what's your zip code? And I was, like, hitting a home run, and then he got to the zip code, and I was like, 54321. You know, something that just blew the cover, and he just was like, wait a minute. And he looked at the license. He's like, this isn't your brother. This is you! It's like, man, you are one hell of a detective. So... again, I was nervous as all get out. I was terrified at this point, so... You know, I was trying to keep my composure, but I just couldn't. I don't know if it was the drink or I don't know if it was the drink or the medication or what, but I just out of nowhere, I just threw up right there, you know, right in front of him, and he was pissed. I'll never forget. He just said, "You just threw up on my brand new boots. Are you kidding me?" He got so mad. He you know, right then, you know, he took me down, took me to jail, stayed there for the night, and I still didn't like connect that this was getting out of control, you know. It was just really, it was just a badge of honor for me. I thought, this is cool. You know, I got a story to tell. And so fast forward back, I get to college, and you know, at this point, you know, it's more drinking. But again, I was feeling so uncomfortable that I was like spacing out these times between when I would use and when I would I wouldn't, you know. I would really, really trying to like, and I would go for a while, and then it would always culminate in some sort of binge, you know, that was usually instigated by alcohol. And at this point, I also discovered painkillers. And I don't know what it was, but really, alcohol had kind of stopped. I mean, it worked. It made me feel better, but it didn't, like, fix me like it used to, you know. It didn't make me completely comfortable with me, but I realized when I mixed alcohol with painkillers, that's when, like, that was the magic touch, you know, that like made me feel okay with me again. And I, again, so then there's this new disease belief: if I can just be like this all the time, if I can just have these two things together, you know, I can be the person I want to be. I honestly believe that. When I came into AA, I just thought, instead of working these steps, if I could have just somehow managed to feel that way, you know, combine alcohols and painkillers all the time, then that would have been the solution. All right, so anyway. Let's see, look at the clock. Okay, we're good. So fast forward, you know, that's what it was. I thought this was going to fix me. I, you know, multiple encounters. I get to College of Charleston. I did decent at this school. I ended up going to College of Charleston, and the summer before that, I would go on these long hiatuses where I would just I would try to prove to myself, hey, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not a drug addict. You know, I can stop for a long time. Other friends of mine can't stop. They do this every day because I was so afraid that I had like damaged my brain, which I would do. I would go online and I would look up brain damage, this, that, you know, what kind of mental disorders I thought I had. I became obsessed and I would always look at this stuff all the time. You know, I had really created these neurotic tendencies and I thought something was really, really wrong with me. But I couldn't figure out what it was. I get to College of Charleston, but actually the summer before that, I remembered I went down there for orientation, and I just had a huge blowout. We get back to Atlanta, and I ended up abusing so many different substances. One night I actually tried to mix, I don't know what it was. I think it was Xanax and a sleeping pill, and I went down and I snorted it, and the next thing I know, I woke up and I was in the hospital. With a group of doctors hovering over me, and I just tried to get up and walk out, and they were like, you know, no, you can't, you better sit down. I sleep it off. Apparently I'd had a seizure or something, and because of that incident, I've been turned down by 3 insurance companies to this day. You know, it's pretty crazy. 5 years ago, and what did I do? You know, of course, I would think for the most part I should call it quits after that. But I remember the second I got out there, after I left that place, I was using again. You know, the afternoon I left and was discharged, I was using again. So I get to College of Charleston again. I tried, at this point I was so desperate to try to fix myself. I think I paid $750 to go see a hypnotherapist in Florida. And supposedly he claimed that he could cure me of my anxiety, my fears, my insecurities, you know, in one super session. So I did that. I went and I paid for it. We went and I saw him. And I came back to College of Charleston and I was like, you know, am I fixed? You know, I went up and I remember talking to this girl, and I seemed a little more comfortable. I thought, well, maybe I'm fixed. She ended up inviting me to a party that night, and I thought, okay, well, you know, I'm going to go to this party. I think I feel a little more comfortable. Maybe this guy fixed me of this fear, this social anxiety I have. I go to the party, And I ended up, you know, I get there, and again, I'm starting to get uncomfortable. You know, I don't want to drink because I don't want to reverse the magic that this guy's done to me. You know, I thought that I didn't want to unfix myself. But then I thought, well, there's a keg here. It's a college party. I just have one drink. I mean, that's like a given. If I don't at least have one in my hand, then I'm not going to look normal. And this is what it turned to at the end. I have one drink. I have one drink, and alcohol for me became the catalyst for everything else. If I was going to drink alcohol, I was a ticking time bomb. I did not know what was going to happen. I remember taking one drink. You know, within 30 minutes, I bought a bag of cocaine. You know, who knows, within an hour, I think that was probably gone. You know, I was going over to my friend's house. I was taking Xanax, huffing other stuff. I mean, and I'd started stealing his stimulants, you know, his Adderall, or I actually think it was called Dexedrine, which is like a military grade stimulant. And it all started with alcohol for me. I mean, always that was the precursor, and this lasted for days. You know, I remember all this. I mean, I remember I ended up meeting this girl, and earlier, and we went out on a date, and we went to this party, and this other guy started talking to her, and and he asked her, you know, she was like, kind of like, well, I'm kind of with this guy, and then I remember him asking her to go someplace, and she was like, are you coming? And I felt so bad about myself that I was like, no, you go ahead, you know, like, you can just kind of take her, you know, I mean, I was just like, I didn't think I deserved anything, you know, or anyone. And I ended up stealing from all these, you know, I basically was quietly stealing these pills from my friends. They found out, but I remember right before they found out, you know, at the end of this big bender I went on, I felt so bad. It was like nothing worked anymore. And I went up to the top of their room, and I grabbed, I believe, you know, a few pills of these uppers, and also some sleeping pills, and I looked at them in my hand, and I just realized that if I took these pills, I might not wake up, you know, but I just didn't even think. I just put them down, and I still don't know if I was just that desperate for it to be over, or I wanted to get high that bad. I'm pretty sure it was probably a little of both. And I woke up on my friend's couch a few hours later, and they were just standing over me saying, you got to get out of here. They had pieced it together. A bunch of their, you know, their prescription medications were missing. And, you know, I went back. I was crying. I tried to send them all these, you know, these I'm sorry, whatever, these apology messages. And I was just bawling on the phone with my mom the next day, you know. And I remember I left my license over at their house. I went back to get it. I went over there, and they wouldn't even look at me. But this girl came out in front of a bunch of people in their living room and handed me my license and said, "Why'd you do it? Why did you do all this stuff?" And all I could say is, "I don't know." And that's the truth. I really didn't know, you know. She just said, you know, get out of here. We don't ever want to see you here again. And I just, you know, just left there crying. I didn't know why I did this stuff. I ended up leaving that school because I just basically burned every bridge that I had there. I came back to Atlanta, started going to meetings, but didn't work the steps, didn't do anything. I just kind of showed up. I got about 2 months of sobriety. You know, but I didn't work the steps, didn't get a sponsor, didn't do any of that stuff. And before you knew it, I was back out again. The last drink I had, I remember I went to a bar. Other drugs were involved, but I really threw a little too much booze down the hatch. My friend put me in a cab. And I think, from what I understand, he told the cab driver to take me back to my apartment. But I was so drunk, I don't think I could tell him where that was. So I believe, from what I'm trying to piece together, he pulled my license out of my pocket and took me to that address, which was my mom's house. He kind of rolled me over on the front lawn. You know, I tried to stumble in. Supposedly, they were like, the screen porch was kind of busted in a little bit. I think I tried to claw my way in like a raccoon. And that didn't work. So what did I do? I tried to knock on the door at like 4 in the morning, and my stepdad came and opened it. And I was just like, hey, and I didn't explain myself. I just kind of walked through. Why is this kid just randomly at our house right now at 4 in the morning? But my mom, you know, moms just smell that stuff. I mean, they just have that intuition. So she came out and was, you know, like just Gandalf from Lord of the Rings, like, thou shalt not pass. Explain yourself. And I couldn't even talk. That was the thing. I was so drunk, I could not communicate. I was trying to tell her that I was in a love triangle with one of my best friends and his girlfriend or something. I mean, it didn't even make sense. I was trying to legitimize why I would get so drunk. I was trying to add drama to this story. You know, well, that was the boiling point. I mean, the next day, I knew I was out of my apartment. You know, I was back. My mom was not going to have me living by myself or with another person other than her. So I was back there. My car was revoked. She was literally just driving me to meetings and dropping me off and then picking me back up. And that was like my schedule, you know. And I will never forget. I went to a meeting and I was just like, shit, man, I don't... Yeah, I'm sorry for cussing, but I was like, man, I don't know what to do. I just saw this guy. He had invited me rock climbing before, before when I gave AA like the meeting approach, and that was it. And I went and asked him to be my sponsor, and he said, yeah, start calling me every day, and just start calling me every day. And I was like, oh, whoa, I don't know about that. Every day, gotta let you know what I'm doing. So. I started working the steps, and I started going to meetings, and, you know, I always had this dream of doing stand-up comedy, and I'd actually gotten to do it, like, once or twice, but the thing was, whenever I started doing it, I would get a little momentum, and then I would start to use, and I would just, like, disappear. You know, and I remember one point when I was on one of these binges that I remembered walking up to my friend's, room to, you know, do a bunch of drugs or something, and I saw on TV, it was like a Comedy Central, you know, presents, or there were some comedians on TV. I remember looking at that and thinking, well, I know I wanted to do that, but, you know, that ship has pretty much sailed. I mean, that kind of sucks. You know, and that was where I was at. I mean, there was this whole life that I wanted to live, and there was this person that I thought I should be, and I just was not that person. And, it really sucked. I mean, to willfully wave the white flag on your dreams and truly believe that any sense of happiness or chance for happiness, joy, and success was out the window. And that's where drugs and alcohol and drugs had taken me. I got into AA, though. I started working the steps, and stuff got better, like a lot. Really, a lot quicker. I mean, I couldn't believe how quick things were. You know, it was like what I was looking for in all these psychiatrists, all this hypnotherapy, all this stuff. It was like I was getting it through these simple steps. You know, 1 through 12. It was incredible, and I couldn't. I don't know why, but I just remembered one time I was doing an open mic night, and I was at a comedy club, and some of my friends were there, and. There were these, you know, female friends from high school, and I was talking to them. And I was like, you know, I'm not terrified right now. That's pretty incredible. And I just remembered that was like a mile marker, because I used to be so terrified when I talked to everybody, you know, and that was, it was really cool to be in a place where I wasn't just for once. And so again, I started working the steps. I thought I, you know, took a detour to try to visit a girl that thought I fell in love with on one of my binges. And when I was sober, that did not work out. Literally turned right back around on the airport. And I think that was I was like, all right, let's do this thing. So I get back to Atlanta. I really start working these steps. And life got a lot better, a lot quicker. It was incredible. I mean, I started finally doing stand-up comedy with some continuity, you know. I actually got momentum, I think within like 8 months, I actually got to do stand-up comedy on television, and that was incredible. I mean, it was like the dream was back. And I thought I had blasted my brains. I mean, I literally thought that I was just done, you know. And here I was. I got to do comedy on TV. I got to go on Bill Bellamy's Who's Got Jokes in Las Vegas, and I got a standing ovation on the first show. It was really cool, you know. And I'm not saying that to brag, but I do like to accentuate that, you know, it's like we get our dreams back in here, you know, and that's what this thing's about. I mean, that's a huge part of this program for me, you know. And then the next night, I went out on stage, and I had used all my great material the first night, and I hadn't slept in a few days because I was so nervous. I mean, I was only like, what, I was newly sober. I was in this high-pressure situation, and I went out there, and I tried to tell a new joke, and it got no laughs, and then another joke got no laughs. The next night, and then all of a sudden it was just like I was watching myself perform from above my body, you know, and I was having a panic attack while on TV, on national television doing stand-up comedy, you know. And Bill Bellamy, the host of the show, came back on, and he looked at me and he said, "Man," in front of everybody, said, "You know what happened? We had such high hopes for you. You were like the favorite to win this thing because it was a competition." He goes, "You know what? You remind me of that AirTran commercial. You know which one I'm talking about? Want to get away?" I was like, "Man, I hate you." You know, and it was just a terrible situation. I ended up going out for another second set, and I felt so dejected that I just, like, gave up. I just said, I can't do this right now. And on TV, I just literally gave up, you know. And I went back to my room and was bawling and threw stuff. And I remember I got back, I called my sponsor the next day, and the only question he asked me is, "Did you drink?" And I said, "No," you know. Said no. And that was in 2 days, I probably felt one of the best and worst, probably the best and worst I've ever felt in sobriety, you know, and I stayed sober through it. And I think that's important for me is, you know, no matter what happens, I can stay sober through it, you know. I might be atrocious, you know. It's like, I get into AA and I can feel more. You know, I get to feel more. Yeah, I feel pain more. I feel happiness more. I feel everything. You know, I felt that whole thing, but I stayed sober through it, you know. And but, you know, as time progressed, more incredible stuff has continued to happen. I get to sponsor people now. It's amazing. I've gotten 4 years, you know. I've gotten to do stand up for another TV show recently. Got to go to LA by NBC, you know, for another competition. I teach a comedy class. And it's just like, man, it's just so, I couldn't believe, and I feel comfortable with who I am, you know. I mean, you guys could come up and talk to me afterwards, and I'll probably be comfortable with that, you know. We'll just have a conversation, and that's incredible. I mean, that's the best gift I've ever gotten, you know, because that was, I think when I came into AA, I just thought, man, if I could just, like, be able to talk to another human being without strategizing every word and without going through every day regretting every past decision I made and who I was, you know, then I've won, you know. And it's like, man, I would have sold myself so short if I had, those are my goals, you know, because it's like, it just keeps getting better. And I think that's what the thing about this is, it's a template for infinite growth. I get to, you know, do GSR work. But the reason I have anything today, and the reason any of it continues to grow is you know, and blessings continue to emerge, it is all because spirituality, you know, this program and God come first. And there's a direct correlation to my spiritual life enhancing. You know, when my spiritual life grows, every other part of my life grows, you know. It might not always show in the bank account, but it actually kind of has, to be honest. I mean, it's been incredible, you know, putting God first. And so, you know, that's what I do. I wake up in the morning, I pray, I meditate, you know, get breakfast, I do some journaling, you know, I take inventory nightly. I go to probably 5 meetings a week at least. And, you know, and I can honestly get to say that I can't say that I'm living the life of my dreams, because if I had said that, you know, what my dreams were, I really would have sold myself short. I didn't know what they should be. And kind of God has shown me what, you know, bit by bit, what life, you know, should be about. And, you know, it's been really great. You know, there's something that when I did come in here and, the, you know, got a little bit of sobriety time under my belt, there was a bit of difficulty. Had some addiction problems in the sexual area, which I'm grateful there was a 12-step fellowship for that, which really, you know, really enhanced my spiritual program, trying to not live by selfish ideals in there. But, you know, really just living the steps, you know, 1 through 12 every day, has been the foundation for an incredible and a whole new life. And, you know, all I can say is it keeps getting better, you know, and that's what I love about it. You know, as long as I keep working it, it keeps getting better. So that's all I got. Thank you guys so much.
Good job, Josh. I knew it was going to be great. Tinsley, will you give out the chips?
My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. Really great story, Josh. I really enjoyed that. And amazing, you told my story, except for the part about being on NBC.
Well, my head was in tomorrow, and my feet followed history. I had an insane notion I could hoodoo everything around me. No. 'Cause too much of everything ain't enough for nothing to me. I got a nudge from the judge, Lord, and put me in recovery. Put the plug in the jug, man, I feel like I've been set free. For too much of everything.